Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where sales leaders teach you what's working for them and how you can build it yourself.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by our sales coaching and consulting services. Are you looking to create repeatable, scalable, and predictable revenue? We've helped thousands of companies grow their business with tailored expert advice backed by testing to ensure they establish the best practices that'll work for them. Head over to bit.ly/predictable revenue coaching to learn more. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about something that is very familiar with a lot of us over the last couple of years. Most of us been forced to start working remote out of necessity, by choice. Some people have really learned to love it. Some people are really yearning to get back into the office. But either way, it's something that we're having to kind of catch up with, right? It's not something that we're used to. So we're kind of changing our processes, building our systems, all those types of things kind of on the fly. And in that way, it's tough to build a nice, repeatable, scalable process out of it while we always feel like we're on the back foot with working remote. So that's why we wanted to talk to an expert that actually has been doing this since before we all had to and kind of ironed out those kinks himself. And he's going to teach us how to do that and speed up that process for ourselves. So once again, I'm Sarah Hicks and I'm your host. And today on the Predictable Revenue Podcast, I'm going to be chatting with an expert about how to successfully run a remote business. He has over 20 years experience building consulting businesses and advising companies like Panasonic, the Financial Times, Dow Jones, Royal Bank, some big names there. He's personally coached over 500 consultants and helped them add 6 and 7 figures annually to their businesses. He runs a multi-million dollar consulting and coaching business himself right now. He hosts another top podcast in this industry, the Consulting Success Podcast. And over 35,000 consultants read his weekly newsletter, and you can be one of those people if you sign up for it after this. But anyway, Michael Zipersky. Oh man, I even asked and I wanted to mess it up. Michael Zipersky, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me, Sarah.
Cool. I'm really excited to dive into this because obviously very topical. We're all living this right now as we speak. Walk me back to when you first built your remote business, why you did that, the thinking behind that, and kind of how that went.
Yes, we're going back now about 13 years, a long time ago. And, you know, quite frankly, this has been the way that we've done it for so long that it just feels normal and natural. We were fortunate that when things happened with COVID and the pandemic and whatever you want to call it, it was business as usual. I mean, we had to step things up in terms of how we supported clients and additional levels of involvement and just making sure that we're being there during that very challenging time for many people. But in terms of our business and our model and how we approach things, it was just, you know, business as usual. We got started again 13 years ago at Consulting Success. We made the decision early on. So my cousin, Sam, who's the co-founder at the company, we decided that we wanted to create another business together. So we had, previous to that, had built and sold a few different companies, but we wanted to create one online that would allow us to live and work from anywhere in the world. That was a big priority for us, as you know, two people, cousins that always enjoyed traveling, seeing different cultures, learning languages, meeting new people. We wanted to have that freedom and flexibility. So that's the reason that we decided to start it and start it with that model in place.
Yeah, absolutely. And back then, it obviously wasn't very common to build a remote first company. How did you kind of, I guess, experience dealing with customers that maybe weren't used to dealing with somebody remote? Like how was sort of interfacing the two types of business when you were running that remote business for the first time?
Yeah, you know, I think this applies to many aspects of business and to our life in general, which is, from a mindset perspective, when you haven't done something before, you tend to look at it with a bit of a negative kind of connotation, or like a bit of a tinge of like, is that even possible? Like, no, that's not the right way to do it, because it's not the status quo. It's not what you're used to. And so when we started back in the day, it's like, yeah, we're going to run a coaching training company for consultants. We're going to teach them how to grow and build successful consulting businesses, because that's what our background has been for, you know, the kind of decade or so before we started the business. And a lot of people thought, well, yeah, like, but you need to meet people in person. You have to travel the world to maybe like do workshops. And we said, well, yeah, we want to travel the world, but not necessarily to run workshops. You know, my wife is from Japan. I wanted to be able to go and spend 3 months in Japan and visit family there. Family is very important to me. So we just said, this is how we're going to do it. And of course, the market will let you know whether your idea works or doesn't work. But we had very little pushback. I mean, if any, I think the business model that we put out there allowed us to see, is there going to be enough people who want to engage, to get support, to get help to grow their consulting businesses through the model that we offer, which is online training programs, online workshops, and then also an online coaching program. And we do have some in-person events. Obviously, during COVID, we didn't, but the bulk of our business was through these online kind of training and coaching programs. So, you know, anytime you put something on the market, you're going to have some people that are attracted to your offer. You're going to have some people that your offer might push away. So those that maybe were pushed away by that, we probably didn't know about them, but there was enough people out there who looked at it and said, yeah, I think I do need help. This looks like the right fit. And so that kind of gave us the validation that we were on the right track. And it's really the approach that we take for anything. Like anytime we roll out a new service, we essentially put it out there with the least investment necessary to see, will this be something that the market wants? And we take the validation, we take that feedback from the market and then decide whether it's something that we want to move forward with or not.
Cool. So talk to me then about this sort of triangle methodology that you've figured out as you went through that process of building and maintaining that remote company, and how, I guess, how it still applies today as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, we call the business and lifestyle triangle. I think this is something that we really guided. It was probably one of our core values without even knowing that it was a core value, or without even creating a diagram or illustration around it. And I've shared this with many clients now over the years. But if you think about a triangle and at the apex or the top of the triangle, what a lot of people tend to do, and this is very common in entrepreneurship, regardless of what industry you're in, you tend to put your business at the top of the triangle, right? So you think about your business, you think about your revenue goals, your financial goals, you know, all those kinds of things. And then below that, you put your lifestyle. And so essentially what that means is that your lifestyle has to support, right, the business. And so you end up making all kinds of adjustments to your lifestyle in order to support your business. And my belief is that it should really be the other way around, that we should be putting our lifestyle at the apex of the triangle and then having our business below it, meaning that we make changes in our business, whether it's the business model, the business structure, how we approach business, but we do it with the goal of supporting the lifestyle that we ultimately want. Because we've all heard about people who, you know, are very successful financially or on paper. And from an external perspective, we look at those people going, wow, look at how amazing they are. But many of these people are miserable, or many of these people haven't really achieved a lot of the things that would create fulfillment for them as a human being. They're successful in the world of business, but outside of that, they're really struggling. And so I remember being in Japan, I was walking kind of beside this little stream. It was cherry blossom season, so sakura season, and just looking at the hanami, or these little cherry blossoms. Like, it was just such a beautiful time. And I remember thinking to myself, this is so nice that I'm doing this. Like, I'm in the place that I want to be. I feel really great. We have a successful business. And I thought about one of my friends who is, and at that time still was, a CEO of a successful Japanese company, bringing in, you know, millions of dollars. But he was traveling all around the world, not because he really wanted to. He did it because he thought he needed to for the business. And he had two young kids at that time. And I remember, like, he was never there for them. And I asked him one day, I was like, why do you travel? Why are you away from home so much? He's, I'm doing it for my kids. I just thought that was so backwards. It's like, so you're working so hard with the business to support your kids, but couldn't you already spend more time with your kids if you wanted to? And I'm not making any judgments on what is right or wrong. Everybody chooses, you know, their own path, but it just, for me, it rang very kind of clear and true that shouldn't we all be thinking first about and getting, like, developing our plan for our lifestyle and what we want to really accomplish and what brings us fulfillment. And once we're clear on that, then we can figure out how to craft our business in a way that supports our lifestyle and not the other way around.
Very interesting. Yeah, absolutely. I think, and that's something that I think is reinforced through, I don't know, through everything, through the media, through socialization, through school, through everything, that it's like the one, defining characteristic of a person is often their job. Like, if I met you at an event or even a non-work event, and I was like, hey, like, tell me about yourself, it's probably gonna be like, well, I work for, you know, I have a consulting business. I do whatever. And we do tend to define ourselves absolutely, on our work, which, like you say, means that we make all sorts of sacrifices with the rest of our life to prop that thing up with the hopeful goal that one day it's going to pay off and we'll be able to kind of turn it on its head and, you know, reap all the rewards and live the life we wanted. When in reality, for so many people, that's not how it happens. You kind of then just get stuck in that cycle of working for retirement, maybe working beyond that. Maybe there's a huge economic downturn and you have to work until you're 80 and then, you know, it's so unpredictable. So it makes sense.
The truth is, many people believe that it has to be one or the other. Like, I'm going to somehow, if I want to be successful in business, I have to sacrifice my lifestyle. Or if I put the focus too much on lifestyle, that means that I'm not going to be able to accomplish a lot in business. And I just don't believe that to be true. And the way I really think about it, Sarah, is that even if I have to make some sacrifices on the business side in order to create the lifestyle that I want, which is, you know, spending time with my kids and traveling and just doing things that are meaningful to me, I'll still end up being happier. So even if I don't have, you know, that extra digit in my bank account, or I don't have that fancy fill in the blank, I still probably feel better as a human being. And so I'm always trying to optimize for lifestyle while still having a successful business. And of course, I mean, we can get into ways to do that when in terms of systems and team and all that kind of stuff. But that's a model that, you know, we really try and live by. It's part of our core values as a company, as a, throughout our whole team. And we just see that resonates a lot with our clients as well, because they want to build businesses that are successful, but businesses that support their lifestyle and not the other way around.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that's a perfect segue to get into some of those systems that you would have learned back in the day, but I'm sure you're still leveraging now as you continue on in remote business. Now the whole world has kind of caught up with that. So yeah, tell me what you've kind of learned about the right systems, processes, infrastructure for remote business.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of factors at play, and I certainly don't think that I have the best plan, or by no means the only plan. There's a lot of ways, and I'm sure maybe even some listeners have better or more effective approaches than we do. But you know, where we start off and when we think about this is it's always the model number one. And what I mean by that is you could develop a business model that could be incredibly effective, but that model may not necessarily support the lifestyle you want to have, or may not support like remote work very well. So this is the beautiful thing about business, is that you truly can create whatever you want. Like if you can think it, and we've seen this play out in so many ways, like, you know, take Elon Musk, and whether you like him or not, it doesn't really matter. But like, just humankind, it's amazing how if we put our minds to, if we can think, if we can envision something, then it's possible to create it, right? Mm-hmm. And so our business models are no different. Don't let your current industry or the current status quo and way that that people do things and need to necessarily be the way that you do things. So feel free to push the boundaries, right? Explore, like if you want to, for example, work from a different place, or if you want to provide a service that is typically done one-to-one, but you want to do it one-to-many, or if you want to, instead of having your own personal involvement, teach your knowledge through courses or online trainings that don't require, you know, your presence, all this stuff is possible. But you need to, first of all, get clear on like, what is the model that we want to build? Because if you're not clear on your model, everything else will just create confusion and complexity. And the challenge with that is that complexity doesn't scale. So yeah, first get really clear about like, what is the model that makes sense here? And I always suggest to people like reverse engineer it. So think about what does ultimate success look like for you, right? Is it to get to, for example, like $1 million? Does it mean $10 million, $100 million? Like, and do you want to have a team? Do you not want to have a team? Like, just figure out what is meaningful for you and what is success from a business perspective and a lifestyle perspective look like. And then start to ask yourself, well, what would be the model most conducive to getting you there, right? And that'll help you to eliminate a lot of things that might be the status quo. That might be the way that you've done always done to today. But you might, for example, like if you have a model in place right now that is great to get you to a $1 million business, but your goal is to get to 5 million, that same model may not work, right? Mm-hmm. Or in order to get it to work, you might need to hire a lot of additional people, but maybe you don't want to hire a lot of additional people because you don't want to manage people and you just don't enjoy that, right? So these are all kind of fun games that as an entrepreneur or somebody involved in a business, you get to think through and play out. So that's the first one is the model. Once you're clear on the model, then, and I think just, I'll back up for a second, Sarah, because I want to make sure that I'm on track and I'm answering your question and to make it valuable for people. But are you really wondering, like, from a remote perspective, what is most important? Or?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I think both. My next question was going to be you're talking about needing to pivot the model, which is something that companies need to do as they hit different phases of their growth, regardless of whether they're in-person, remote, whatever. But I guess, if you're making the shift from in-person to remote, it's a bit of a different sort of catalyst to that change than what you're probably used to. So I think we all understand that, you know, you go from like a founder-led motion before you get to that first million. Now you've justified, you know, hiring the next rung of people. Now you get maybe some teams going, like the sort of natural progression of models through the scale of a business. I think we mostly kind of understand and have seen play out in the businesses that we admire or work alongside or whatever. But I think what's tough is going from in person to remote and knowing that the model has got to shift, not because of that thing that usually makes it shift. Right. So how do you make those changes?
Yeah, you know, I don't actually see that as being a real challenge. I think that the biggest roadblock or hesitation or potential frustration or unease that people have when they think about going from in-person to online and you know, not only from a business perspective, but just, you know, like a delivery perspective and team perspective, it's really mindset, right? Mindset is what holds most people back. And again, if you haven't done it, you're going to start thinking through about everything that could go wrong with it before you've actually done it. Mm-hmm. When you take that leap, it ends up not being that hard. But I can't really think of, like, off the top right now, most of the businesses that have gone online, started off not online, right? I mean, so mm-hmm. it's possible to do. It really just comes down to making the decision that this is the direction that we want to go. You know, take, for example, I think maybe one way to illustrate this would be speaking, right? So there were a lot of people who made their money, had their career based on speaking. Mm-hmm. Prior to COVID, very few of them started thinking about the potential for not being able to do that, right? And so there were those that started to prepare for that in advance, not necessarily knowing that there was going to be, you know, COVID coming, but they were just thinking about scale and things of that nature. But some people didn't think about, they were just very, you know, insular and like, this is what they were going to do. They were just speaking in person. But we saw very quickly that many people took speaking, which you would think, like, you have to be in person. You have to, like, you can feel me almost, like I'm we're in the same room, that energy, right? But now all of a sudden people are moving their keynote talks and still getting paid tens of thousands of dollars, not hundreds of thousands of dollars, to deliver a talk online. And so we wouldn't have thought that that is possible, but all of a sudden it very quickly becomes possible because it's what becomes necessary, or it becomes what is needed. And now there'll be people who, of course, will go back to speaking in person, but there's also be people who will never go back to speaking in person, or at least it'll only be a percentage of what they do, because they've recognized that all of a sudden, I don't need to physically travel the world. I don't need to be a road warrior and jump on all these, mm-hmm. you know, flights and collect all these points. I can spend a lot more time with my family or whatever is important to me, and I can still make an impact. And not only that, but I can make an impact on a lot more people, because I can get up this morning and do a presentation in Europe, and then I can do a presentation, you know, later in the afternoon to people in Australia. So it's all of a sudden you start seeing, like, wow, I can actually reach the globe. And I think the other kind of connection to this in terms of what COVID has shifted is it's taught a lot of organizations that they can actually not only maintain, but they can truly thrive in their businesses with a remote team. And that this whole idea of remote team, now you can actually tap into the world's top talent. So you don't need to physically only think about your own geography and deal with that market, especially if it's a very challenging, you know, tough labor market as we're in right now, where there's a lot of demand for people. But you can actually look beyond borders. You can look to Europe, you can look to Southeast Asia, you can look wherever, right, to find great people. And so this is, I think, another benefit that's common. Very few people, I shouldn't say very few, but I think there's still a lot of opportunity, especially for smaller to mid-sized businesses, to kind of think about this and look at how they can tap amazing talent to help them to achieve their growth.
Yeah, absolutely. Makes sense. I think one of the things that was a big adjustment for the companies that moved remote, especially if they were kind of early stage and hadn't built out some of these, you know, systems of communication that kind of come with a larger business where you aren't working face to face with many of the people you're working with, that part of it was kind of difficult to replicate or difficult to maintain. Once all of a sudden it wasn't this sort of informal communication, you're walking past each other, you're overhearing things, you're having a little huddle when you realize that there's something that needs to be tackled there in the moment. So how do you map that against the remote organization?
Yeah, so I don't consider myself an expert in this area, but I'll tell you what we've always thought about, and that is just communication, like just being very clear with communication. I don't think that you can replicate the experience of being in the same room with somebody, which is why that it's, I think, still incredibly important for teams to spend time together, right? So if I think about it's tomorrow, our team, kind of that's local, will be getting together to spend some time together, right? You can't replicate that. Even though we have a team meeting every Thursday and we're all on Zoom, we can see each other, it's still different to be able to be in the same room. So finding opportunities to do that as a company, whether you're a team of three people or 300 people, I still think that is a very important thing to look and do. But beyond that, in terms of the day-to-day, you know, it's making sure that you have those consistent meetings or touch points. That's really where I think a lot of people are kind of, you know, going in the wrong direction, is if they're thinking, oh yeah, because we are right now running remote, we don't need to have that kind of those same touch points or same level of communication and intimacy. And that's where I think, you know, you want to make sure that you do have that. You do have the regular touch points. You are still in touch with people, whether you're using Slack, you're jumping on Zoom, you're doing something else. To me, I think that's a really important point. But I don't have any real secrets or like, hey, you need to structure this kind of meeting. It's more, if you look at some of the best practices out there from whether it's, you know, EOS, or any of the other systems, whether you're doing a daily huddle, or you're doing, you know, the weekly team meeting, or you're having, in most cases, you know, some kind of communication with your core team members every single day. I think that's incredibly important. And then, you know, we can kind of back out from that, some of the other systems that you would use for tracking your KPIs and performance and scorecards. But in terms of communication, I just think it's important to get very clear about having consistent communication with the team, regardless of whether you're in person or not.
Mm-hmm. And okay, so say there's a company listening to us now who did the thing, they've gone remote, they're trying to figure out if they're set up in a way that is going to be, you know, conducive to continuing to scale. Walk us through how they would kind of take stock, kind of do an audit of where they are right now, and then the steps that they should take to make those adjustments so that they are ready to kind of run it at full capacity remote.
Okay, well, so I'll answer this from the perspective of like how we approach it as a you know, coaching training company for consultants. And we reverse engineer, like it's not so much that we think about what are the best practices for running a remote business. We think about what are our annual goals, what are our quarterly goals, right? And then we get clear on the priorities. We assign those priorities to a specific team member. And then of course, there's metrics that we're all tracking based on those things. So we're not thinking about like, hey, do we need to use this new technology to have some kind of, you know, to improve our conversations or things of that nature. It's more, here's what we're working towards as a team to achieve. Are we making progress on these things? And if we're not making progress in a specific area, why is that? Oh, it's because we don't have clear communication around this. Okay, well, how do we improve that communication? Oh, like we're not using a good project management system. We're just trying to do everything through emails or Google Docs. Well, that's probably not a good idea, right? So it's not so much about the tools that you need to have. I mean, these are all important things, but we work through it and think more through it in terms of like the business case, because one thing that I think a lot of, especially employees, really like and appreciate about the new style of work is that you don't have to have a boss breathing down your neck, right? And what a lot of people want is like, if I can get my job done, then do you really care about like how I do it, right? And you don't need to oversee me, just as long as like I'm hitting the goals that we've set out, like isn't that all that really matters? So that to me is where how we kind of approach it, reverse engineer from the business side, and if people are doing well. But yeah, I mean, yeah, there's lots of tools that can help with this there, like, you know, project management tools, communication tools like Slack, obviously Zoom or Microsoft Teams. But to me, this is not stuff that we spend like a lot of time thinking about. It's more what is the use case or what is the business case? And I'll give you one quick example maybe of this, documenting SOPs, right? So if we're creating, for example, like updating our employee handbook, or we're developing new SOPs and we want new team members to make sure they're part of those, or we want to have a better onboarding process for our salespeople or for our coaches or for whoever it might be. You know, these are all things that need to live in a system. And historically, you might just have that in a printed manual, like welcome to the team. But now, you know, you don't have that. So there's really great tools out there that you can use to document all those things. And that becomes a real business need. And I think as a remote team, even more important, because you want to have a central hub for all these things that people can log into. And yes, you kind of patch a bunch of things together like Google Docs and all other kinds of, you know, things of that nature, but having a central system where your team can really make sure that they can get the information they need in terms of how to do something, to me is really important. So that's just one example in terms of, you know, project management as well, but there's lots of them out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And so thinking back to your experience kind of growing a remote business from scratch, because a lot of people, we've talked in the kind of scenario that there's an established business, how established, who knows, but they've moved and they've now had to go remote. But there are also, you know, a whole generation of companies being born in this era that are now going remote first from the beginning. So having done that very thing yourself, I guess, how do you kind of build out, systematically build out that business, taking into account like, okay, so you know what kind of model, what kind of systems you want at first. Now figuring out who to hire or, you know, what was your process there? In your remote business?
Well, I mean, I think my answer is probably not gonna be that exciting for you. Like it's really very similar to being offline, whether online, right? So we're always gonna look at, anytime you're rolling something new out, you wanna validate that there's kind of a good fit for it in terms of it's something that the market wants and is willing to invest in and pay for. Once you have that, then you wanna, you know, build your pipeline a little bit or make sure that there's revenue and profit coming in, and then look at reinvesting that in the way that makes the most sense. So for many companies that are just getting started, or many people that are just getting started, their first hire is probably going to be some kind of a virtual assistant, somebody that can help them to look at everything. And it's not something that this person does. I mean, you can do it yourself, but it's really taking an inventory. It's something that we encourage all of our clients to do, whether they have team members or not. and something that's good for everybody to do, take an inventory of like how you're spending your time. And if you look at, for example, like, you know, emails that you've sent out, or you look at your calendar, you look at your project management system and take an inventory of all that, you're going to probably find that there's a bunch of stuff that you're doing right now that is not high value. And it doesn't mean it's not high value for anybody, but it means it's not high value for you. So if your number one role is business development, or it's bringing in, you know, new leads or closing sales, all the other stuff about like researching things or creating presentations, you know, like that's bookkeeping. These aren't things that you should be doing. And if you're just getting started, of course, you're going to be scrappy and do what you need to do. But as soon as you have some revenue and some profit coming in, you want to make sure that you delegate that to somebody else as quickly as possible, because that's stuff that they're probably better than you at doing anyways. But the key thing is that it frees you up now to focus on the things that matter most. And you just replicate that. So you bring in one person who takes care of those first few things. Then all of a sudden, so let's say you got your VA. Now you might go, okay, well, I got my VA. They're good at some things. But what I really need is, like, I want to be more active on, let's say, social media. So I need somebody who can create social media content. Like, I can, you know, share the ideas, but I need somebody who can actually post in the different places and, you know, be active and create visuals and all that. Okay, well, so that might be another hire, right? So the hires will really depend on your model, but the whole idea, and this kind of goes back to the lifestyle and business triangle, is that by taking this inventory of what do you truly enjoy doing and what do you not enjoy doing, there's gonna be some things that you can always just remove, like they're waste. They're just actually not stuff that's gonna help you to grow the business, but there are gonna be some things that are necessary, but you just don't enjoy doing them. And so you shouldn't be doing them. So as soon as you have the ability to get those off of your plate, you want to do that typically sooner than you are ready to do it. And that's now going to free you up to not only do work you enjoy doing a lot more, but typically the work you enjoy doing is actually the work that creates the most value for the business. So that's the real kind of process that we use. And, you know, we've seen consultants go from one person to being just them to scaling up to a team of, you know, 10, 12, 20 people, just even kind of going through that process consistently of always asking themselves, where do we need help? Right. So at some point it's going to be, okay, I don't want to be the person doing all the delivery myself. So we need to now let's start training people who can also help us with delivery and so on and so forth.
Yeah. And how do you strike the balance? Because one of the toughest things, I think, as an earlier stage company, when you're, you know, especially you're bootstrapped, you're trying to use your money the most effectively as you can, and you're trying to balance scale with not overloading the individuals that you hire or wearing too many hats yourself. So it's that balance between the kind of resilience, but also, like you mentioned, taking those steps to scale before you might think that you're ready for them. So how do you kind of strike that balance?
Yeah, I mean, so there's so many lessons, or it's a great question, right? Dan Sullivan wrote a great book called The 25-Year Framework. And that kind of talks about the whole idea that as entrepreneurs, we typically want to accomplish so much in a very short period of time. And it's like that saying goes that, you know, you tend to like underestimate how much you can get done over a longer period of time, but you overestimate what you can get done in like a short period of time, right? And so as entrepreneurs, we tend to judge our success based on what we're seeing right now. We forget what we've accomplished in the past. So we're not even looking at like how much progress we've made, let's say over the last 6 months or 12 months. We just look at how are we doing right now? And if we're not seeing that we've made a great deal of progress in a short period of time, we tend to be very hard on ourselves. And so thinking about this longer runway, and that's also why it's so important that you're doing work that you enjoy doing, because otherwise, like most of the time is going to be spent in the journey, right? Not the actual destination. And I know for myself and so many other entrepreneurs over the years that you might first start off, like I remember back in the day, Sarah, thinking like, I can't wait. Like when we make our first $10,000 online, like life is going to be amazing. And then you hit 10,000, it's like, okay, like now let's get to 50,000. Like, and it just keeps building. It doesn't stop. So if it doesn't stop, if the goalposts are always moving, right? If the destination is always changing, then let's really optimize for the journey, not for the destination. And so, yeah, that kind of takes us back to the idea of, it's just really critical that you start thinking and judging your success, not just on what you're doing right now, but like giving yourself more time to succeed. The other thing I was going to mention too is, one thing that we see a lot is that when you're an entrepreneur, when you're a founder of a business, you tend to wear many hats in the early stages. And a really common mistake, and I certainly made this as well in my early days, is when you bring on a hire, you try and give that person so much because you think to yourself, well, I do a lot. Why can't they do a lot, right? And then of course, they struggle because you've thrown so many things at them and you're thinking, well, like I can just do that in 5 minutes. Why is it taking them like 3 hours to do it? And you forget, well, yeah, it's taking me 5 minutes because I've been doing it for the last like 5 years, right? They're just new to it. Like they've been, so there's all these kinds of things. So it is important to recognize that, you know, usually when you're making a hire, you want to get a specific person to do a specific thing or to do a specific set of things. As an example, if you hire somebody who you want to do research for you, to help you with your emails, to create graphics for you, to post on social media, to do outreach, to do follow-ups, like, you know, you're probably going to get somebody that is okay at some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. They're probably going to feel overwhelmed, but they're not going to be good at any of that stuff, right? Because they can't, like they're swimming in too many things. So by really categorizing what are the different areas, it's like, oh, okay, I need help with finance. I need help with design. I need help with social media. I need help with ads. I need help with whatever, right? Then you can get very clear about finding somebody that can really excel in those areas. And rather than trying to overload them with too much, help them to kind of, you know, to grow and succeed in that role.
Yeah. Interesting. It's almost like, yeah, we've got to apply in the same way that in recent times we've started to apply the kind of jobs to be done framework to, you know, businesses and thinking about, you know, how a vendor can solve your problem. You wouldn't look for a vendor that could solve the one thing they say they can solve. And then when they come in, you're like, perfect. And I'm also going to get you to do this, 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 and this. I see you've got a little bit of capacity. Can you take on that? It's just not how it works. And we're kind of, we understand that in the realm of when we're looking at, having a contractor or, you know, somebody, a vendor come in and take care of that one thing that's not part of our core competence as a business, but it's the same thing as a person. Like you've got your core competencies, like you've mentioned, you hang on to those, you create the most value there, but you need help with something that is somebody else's core competency. And they're not going to have 1,000 core competencies that you also didn't have. And that's why you're having to hand them off. Yeah.
Even if it looks similar, I mean, let's say you have a private chef and you go, the chef is amazing. They're so good with like cutting, you know, like with their blade and all this kind of stuff. Well, yeah, you're not gonna get that person to do heart surgery for you just because they know how to use a knife. Like, right. Yet we do something very similar when we bring on team members. We think like, they can just help us with all this stuff. It's really important. I mean, we haven't really touched on the culture side of things, but it's also really important that you're making sure that the work that you're giving your team members is work that they enjoy doing and that fulfills them, because otherwise they're not gonna stick around for very long. And that doesn't mean that 100% of what any one person does is gonna be something that they absolutely love. There's typically gonna be a certain percentage of everybody's job. It's stuff you need to do, but it's not stuff that you enjoy. But the majority of where you should be spending your time should be on things that you do enjoy. And that's not just for you as the founder, the person at the top. That should be for everybody on your team, because then they can really thrive in those roles.
Yeah, absolutely makes sense. The last kind of thing I wanted to pick your brain about was how, back on that kind of topic of balancing the scale and kind of being scrappy and using your money really effectively, but obviously with the intention of growing and scaling, is minimizing waste in sales and marketing and kind of how you view that from a remote perspective.
So, I mean, my overall theory and kind of belief around this is what most people tend to do when they think about marketing is they create a lot of activity, but activity does not equal impact, and certainly does not connect directly to results. So the question that we always ask ourselves and remind ourselves of, and also suggest to clients very often, is what is the most direct path to get in front of your ideal client? So in our world, I mean, if you're selling tea, or you're selling, you know, cell phones or neckties, maybe it's different. I don't know that world as much. My business and what we've been doing for the last 23 years is selling, you know, consulting services and working with consultants. So that's a world that I know, kind of more B2B organizations. But you know, in that case, you want to be very thoughtful about engaging with a client. Yeah, it's not just push a button, you know, invest $100,000 into something, right? Or whatever the investment is. Like every decision or every purchase that is, or engagement that for a consulting service or an advisory service comes from having a conversation. Yet what I see a lot of people doing is they create a lot of activity that doesn't necessarily directly connect them to having a conversation. So for example, and this actually just happened, we had a client kind of group call earlier today with a bunch of clients. And one of them was asking like, hey, you know, should I update my LinkedIn profile? Should I update my website for these things before I go out? And I said, okay, well, what's the most direct path? What can you do right now to create a conversation with your ideal clients? And he's like, okay, well, yeah, I guess there's a bunch of people I'm just thinking right now that I haven't reached out to that I know that might need what I have to offer. Okay, do that. Like, start with that, right? Mm-hmm. So if we think about waste, there's a lot of waste created by people who are just busy with activity. And those activities tend to be the things that are easiest to do. They're comfortable. Like, it's really comfortable to sit in your home office, updating your LinkedIn profile, or changing the copywriting on your website, or creating a new logo, or even updating your strategic plan, or kind of all these different things that you could be doing, right? Or like that might help you, But the stuff that typically feels a little bit harder to do, like actually picking up the phone or sending an email or following up with somebody or asking for an introduction, these feel like a little bit harder to do, right? There's a bit more hesitation, but those are the things that actually generate business in our world. And so that's where I would say, always ask yourself, what is the most direct path or the most direct kind of steps that I could take to get me in front of an ideal client, to have a conversation and do more of that? Whatever that is for you, that's what you should be focusing on, or at least that is what you should be prioritizing. So I'm not saying like, don't write articles, don't do webinars, don't do social, don't do ads. These are all great things. But if you have low hanging fruit in front of you where you could literally pick up the phone or send an email or ask for an introduction to get in front of an ideal client, do that first. Because that's usually going to have a much bigger impact a lot sooner than doing all the other things.
Yeah, great advice. Well, I think that's a perfect place to wrap it up. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. If people want to learn more from you, Michael, if they want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Yeah, I mean, you talked at the top there about all the different things that we have with the podcast and so forth. But yeah, consultingsuccess.com is home base for everything. We also have kind of a compilation of our most popular articles, best practices, resources for people who want to grow successful consulting businesses. And they can get that by going to consultingsuccess.com/blueprint. That's free.
Nice. Very cool. Yeah. Well, thank you again so much for joining us. Great to chat to somebody who's been doing the remote business thing for a lot longer than most of us have, and kind of hearing some of the ways that you tackled it, but also a little bit of kind of reassurance that it's not as difficult as we might think that it is. It is quite similar, and it's just that bit of a mindset shift that helps you recalibrate to the remote world and then continue on with that momentum that you already have. So yeah, thank you. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Sarah.
Cool. And thank you to all of you guys for joining us for another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. Please, if you haven't already, hit the subscribe button on YouTube so that you can be notified each week when we have wonderful guests like Michael joining us and telling us all about the ins and outs of sales, revenue, marketing, all that good stuff. We'll catch you next time.